You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Scottish Rugby Podcast brought to you by the Scottish Rugby Blog. I am Cammy Black. It's a special this week because we've got two episodes, and we sometimes have two episodes where we do a kind of wee preview of an international match or something, but this week, because it was the end of the Guinness Six Nations and is now the start of the TikTok Six Nations, we thought we'd do two separate podcasts, give them both their own space because, in a way, Craig, we didn't want to taint what's coming and all the positive stuff that's coming with the horror of what's just been.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, I think we, you know, we've been covering a little, you know, a bit of the women's game for some time now. But it's fantastic to actually have the podcast covering the more, hopefully the more positive Six Nations that are coming up.
Yeah, we're very lucky as well to be joined by Rachel Law, current scrum half for Watsonians. Good evening, Rachel.
Thank you very much for having me, guys.
No, it feels like Craig said, it feels positive this time. There's a bit of a buzz around the TikTok Six Nations this time, and I don't know if it's, do you think, Rachel, it's because it's maybe got its own space now, that it's not kind of running alongside the men's one. It's got its own kind of standalone tournament.
Yeah, exactly. I think kind of women's rugby as a whole is on the up around the world, and especially in Scotland, there's new teams popping up left, right and centre. So, no, it's fantastic to have such a brilliant sponsor like TikTok. TikTok's, don't ask me about TikTok, I think I'm too old for that. But no, it's all the hype at the moment. And to have a fantastic sponsor like that for the Women's Six Nations is really getting it out there for everyone to see. So no, should be a fantastic campaign.
The sponsor is an interesting thing, Craig. I know we've talked on this podcast before with my adventures in TikTok and some of the unfortunate things, disturbing things I've seen on there until someone showed me how to put the child filters on. listen, don't search for accountants because that's not what you think it means. but it is, it kind of feels exciting. It feels much more dynamic in a way, I think, than the men's tournament because, I mean, we were talking about pundits last night on the other podcast, but there is something very old-fashioned and very staid about the men's tournament still that's struggling to break away. But this, having someone like TikTok involved, feels really exciting, Craig.
I think what's fantastic about it is the fact that not just the TikTok side of things, but the Women's Six Nations, the women's game that is accelerating and accelerating and accelerating, it's almost a clean sheet. When I'm talking about punditry and I'm talking about TV, etc., it's almost a clean sheet. So they can bring in players who have either just finished or just coming through to do some punditry and actually give you some up-to-date punditry rather than talk about when they were, you know, when they were on the back foot in 19 oatcake, you know, and all these different things. It's an air of excitement to it. And obviously, with the build, you know, Rachel just talked just quickly there about the amount of teams that are coming to the game in Scotland, especially. It just gives us a far more, you know, it's more far more targeted. The young women that are coming out, coming through schools, will see it now far more because of TikTok, and it just gives a bit of oomph, you know. It's fantastic.
Rachel, I'm interested, kind of, what was your journey into rugby like then? How did you come into rugby?
So I started playing rugby when I was about 4 years old, just down at my local rugby club. My dad played for the first team down at Pennycook, so was always there at the weekend, always there on a Saturday, and picked up a ball. I was always a bit competitive, and I have an older sister, Sarah, and so was always one for she was standing watching the game and I'd be tackling her. So yeah, just got involved in rugby, came all the way up through the kind of mini section at Pennycook, and then when I got to secondary school, I started playing at Murrayfield Wanderers under 15s, moved up to their under 18s, and then into their senior squad there. And then when I went to university, kind of one of the main reasons that I wanted to go to Edinburgh University was the fantastic setup that they had for women's rugby. So yes, went to Edinburgh University, played in the Bucks National League, which is essentially a university league that spans up and down the country. So you're playing against teams like Hartbury, playing against teams like Northumbria, and who are kind of top of the game. So yes, played at university. And then when I graduated last year, moved on to play for Watson's, where I play currently.
Yeah. And how's the standard kind of changed over the years? Because I know obviously that the format of the Premiership in Scotland's changed, and there's certainly there seems to be much more women's teams around, and even kind of youth teams around. Have you noticed the standards improving over the last few years?
Yeah, massively. In terms of kind of getting more under 12s teams, under 15s teams, under 18s, and kind of bridging that gap all the way up. And then in terms of the Premiership, as you say, it's kind of been restructured now. This year in particular, every single one of those games in the Premiership were competitive. Every single one of those teams were competitive. And you've kind of got the likes of Geary and West of Scotland, who are in National One, knocking on the door of the Premiership as well. So the standard throughout Scotland is up and coming. And hopefully, obviously, England's are kind of the leading the way in terms of their Allianz Tyrrells Premier 15. So it's really good that Scotland are pushing that as well with the Premiership side of things.
Yeah, I mean, we should say congratulations, because you were part of the Watsonian side that won the Premiership in January. Yes. 67-0 against Hillhead Jordan. But then I was talking to Ian Hay, who had covered the Hillhead Jordan Watsonians game in November, and actually that was much tighter. So although people might look at the, you know, the 67-0 final, the games I think up to that were much tighter than that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not entirely sure what happened in that final. I think we found some form. But yeah, no, all of the kind of league games heading up to the kind of semi-finals and finals had been super competitive. You had the likes of Cartha and Heriot's, who are kind of new into the Premiership, competing with Hillhead and Watson. So no, all of it had been really, really competitive up until that final. I'm not quite sure. We must have found some good form. It was a lovely day to play some rugby, so maybe the weather played a part as well.
Yeah. And Craig, you've obviously coached women's rugby as well. Have you kind of noticed a change in kind of the numbers and the interest over the last few years?
Yeah, I think you know, I'm wearing my Howe Harlequins t-shirt tonight, actually. I'm still coaching, but I came away from the Quins last year, and they were in fourth position, or they finished fourth position in National One. And we started way back and came through the system. And so there was a lot of, you were really at the point where we had Kirkcaldy and us, and there was a couple of teams that would probably feed us a little bit, because there wasn't enough players at those other teams to actually have a 15s game. But now we're at a stage where, you know, Dundee have set up a new team and are doing incredibly well. In fact, I think they're managing now to produce two teams. We've got Strathy over in Forfar, who have started a new team that are doing very, very well. And I'm only just talking about the Fife and Tayside area that I know a little bit better. So it has, there is a lot of teams out there, but actually what's more encouraging from my point of view is that there are more junior teams than senior teams. You know, we're seeing a lot more teams having their under 12s or under 15s. And that, I guess that we were screaming for it at that, you know, 5 years ago, because we had girls who were coming through playing up to primary seven who were playing phenomenally well, and everyone, you know, they were almost doing, you know, they were doing better than the boys a lot of the time, and showing better skills, and then they had nowhere to go within their own club, which is the club that they've grown up with and they love, and so they were having to look elsewhere, and that's one of the reasons we started the How Harlequins. But I think you know, it is very, very encouraging. It's quite an exciting thing to see, because you're seeing these new teams coming along, and I think that, you know, Gary have been knocking on the door of the Prem for some time now, and we've played Gary many, many times, and they are a very, very passionate outfit up there, and I'm looking forward if they do get promoted. I think have they been promoted?
They have, I think.
I'm looking forward to see how they fare with the Prem next year. It's going to be great.
Yeah. It's been a couple of kind of interesting things. Obviously, Craig and I, Rachel, have talked a lot on the podcast with the other guys about, you know, professional rugby for women in Scotland and the opportunities. And there's been kind of, obviously, there's more recent kind of news that Brian Eason's been working to get kind of an understanding of players' needs now, or almost kind of like as a stepping stone maybe towards professionalism. Obviously, there's people who have full-time jobs and careers where it wouldn't make financial sense for them to play professional rugby, but need to be supported. And you've got people who are studying. How kind of challenging is it to kind of maintain standards, the kind of standards you need to maintain to be at the level you're at, and kind of say balance university and now a career for you?
Yeah, exactly. It's difficult. Time management is difficult, but at the end of the day, I love playing rugby. So for the love of the sport, it doesn't pay the bills. The reason that I play is for the love of the sport. And it's fantastic to see the game growing in Scotland. Obviously, there's kind of a long way to go, but the girls have just recently qualified for the World Cup after a spectacular win in Dubai against Colombia. So hopefully, as you say, growing the game from grassroots, getting kind of more and more girls interested in rugby, wanting to play rugby, you push it from the bottom and hopefully kind of the funding comes. In terms of the girls at the moment, each of them are kind of being supported as much as they can be in kind of the lead up to the World Cup. Lots of them have, as you say, full-time jobs. Lots of them are studying, so it's tailored to kind of each individual as to kind of the support that they receive, but hopefully in the not so distant future we'll be following in England's footsteps and hopefully having some professional contract, full-time professional contracts for the women.
Yeah, and we heard that. I mean, Craig, I think it was today, I think it's come out, and I saw it reported, Brian Eason saying that there is a long-term plan to try and get in the Premier 15s, which is quite exciting. So that's the first time I think that someone has publicly said that from the SRU, that is an ambition.
Yeah. Sorry, on you go, Rachel. Please. You know far more than I do.
No, I was just going to say, England have got it right. They have been building over the past 10, 15, 20 years their women's game, and kind of the Premiership 15s that they're running at the moment is fantastic. Just look at how many of the kind of Scotland players are playing down south at the moment. So getting a team in Scotland that would be able to travel and play against the Premiership 15 teams down in England is probably the best step. We keep the players at home, therefore they're able to kind of inspire and develop the game in Scotland rather than having to go down south. But you're also kind of bringing a team into a fantastic environment, which is the Premier 15s.
It's like, you know, Rachel saying there, Craig, about the number of players, and I'm looking at the team that's been announced for the England game, and the majority of players are playing in the Premiership. I suppose that's testament to the strength of the grassroots in Scotland, that so many clubs in England are recruiting Scottish players.
Yeah, certainly Rachel will know more than I do about that. But on my side of things, from what I saw and from what we talked about when I was coaching, it was very much we had two or three players who, one of our players went to Loughborough University and that was the link to go on to Loughborough Lightning. And unfortunately, through injuries and bits and pieces, she's not made that progression. But then you've got Nick Howitt, who Rachel and I both know, and she had a progression. She went through the Howe, then into Edinburgh Uni, and then she's now down at Sale Sharks playing and combining it with a full time job as a vet. So we could probably point at the SRU and say to them, well, why are all our players going away from Scotland? But on the other side of things, they're being offered not only the opportunity to play a high level of rugby, but they're also being offered an amount of money that will help top up and obviously, you know, recompense them for the amount of work that they have to do to be these professional athletes. I don't know if that I'm slightly skewed, Rachel. I might be wrong, but just seeing the drain. It's a shame to see the drain, but it's actually being shown in the national team to see the levels are coming up and up and up, and we're becoming more and more competitive because they're being exposed to more professional rugby.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Craig. In terms of, it was really good. We had quite a few of the Scotland girls, first of all, head down to DMP, Sharks in Durham area, and now quite a few of them have moved down to Sale as well. So, as you say, it is Scotland. Grassroots rugby in Scotland has the ability to produce some outstanding players. So it is testament to them that they've managed to go down south and are starting for Sale, Loughborough, Gloucester, Hartbury. So yes, it is fantastic. But as you say, if we can get a competitive women's team in Scotland that can compete at that level, I think that's kind of the next step for kind of growing the game in Scotland.
How has that worked in terms of what you've seen, Rich? Obviously, you were in the Scotland camp kind of, you're announced in the squad in 2020, and I know you got Anna Smith at Watsonians. Do you see that kind of influence in the stuff people are picking up down south coming back to Scotland? Is that kind of feeding into the kind of stuff that you're doing?
Yeah, exactly. And being in camp with them, having them being down south and kind of got the training at that high level is fantastic. The kind of knowledge and skills that they bring back from that rubs off on all of us. In particular this season, Molly Wright, who also plays for Watsons, she went down and played a couple of games for Sale Sharks and then has come back and been involved in kind of Watsons stuff. So the skills, knowledge and things that they can bring back to Scotland is fantastic. So if we were able to get a women's team up here and get them all back up, I think it would be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this squad is a force to be reckoned with, I think, now. I mean, it was, I think, Craig, we said last year, it was maybe a disappointing Six Nations for Scotland. Unfortunately, the tournament wasn't finished, so we don't know how that's ended, but would have ended, but it's they've got a lot about them. I think, you know, the outside of England, and we'll come on, we'll talk about this weekend's match in a moment, but outside of England, you look at the other teams, you think, well, Scotland are there or thereabouts with everybody else.
Go Craig.
No, honestly, crack on. Well, no. on my side of things, looking, I guess, outward in, there's a few things have been put in place that I think have really are growing the Scotland team. They're getting to train together more. And again, we go back to the point about having a professional team in Scotland that would aid Scotland camps a lot more, because you're not having to drag people from London and from Leicester and everything up and then to train together. They've also, this is absolutely no disrespect to the coaches that have come along through the Scotland system, but they've got a pretty serious coach now with Brian Eason. And I think Tyrone I've forgotten Tyrone's second name, but and his assistant coach. I think these guys, you know, I know Brian's been involved in rugby and in within the SRU for a long, long time. And so it's this stability of good coaching, the player, a steady squad. They're bringing in new players, but the bones of the decision makers of the squad are there and have been there for some time. And they're starting to get this professionalism because of I'm not saying they weren't professional, but because they're being exposed to the professional rugby at their different teams, that it's all coming together and they're looking stronger than ever. And I'm really excited about it.
I suppose before Brian Easton, though, Rachel, we had Philip Doyle in, who had a lot of experience with Ireland. And I don't know whether or not there was maybe a shift, whether he brought something into the Scotland camp that said, and I suppose whether that was even a kind of a mark from the SRU to say we're taking the women's game seriously. Here's a guy who's had success with Ireland, and whether he kind of brought the standards, you know, raised standards in the national camp.
Yeah, Philip was really good. He brought a lot of tempo. He brought a lot of experience, as you say, coming from kind of the Ireland setup. So it was nice to have, albeit very briefly, have him for kind of the 2020 Six Nations. And then, unfortunately, due to kind of personal reasons, he was unable to continue with us. But Brian was assistant coach to Philip as well. So he kind of naturally took over that role. But as you say, let's look at Scottish rugby's values at the moment. Women is one of their values. So hopefully that just shows that they are looking to take it seriously. They are looking to kind of put more funding into it. And as you can see, kind of over the last couple of months or so with the results that the Scotland women have been getting, hopefully this kind of Six Nations will go well for them. And we'll hopefully continue to kind of grow the game and get more funding involved.
Yeah. If we go through the fixtures, I'm going to put England to one side. We'll come to England last because it's this weekend and we can do the preview of that. But if we go through the fixtures and the order of the fixtures, we've got Scotland, they've got Wales next up, away to Wales. Rachel, obviously the Wales have kind of, there's been the big announcement around Wales that they're going to award these professional contracts, that there's going to be a lot of investment. They kind of see, it's hard to know whether or not they're behind or parallel with Scotland, but the games have always been closely fought at an international, you know, international level, certainly.
Yeah, definitely. A very historic win against Wales a couple of years ago. A kick in the last few minutes by Sarah Law was a spectacular. I'm biased, I'm sorry, but
you're allowed to be, it's fine.
But yeah, Wales have, as you say, just recently announced 12 full-time contracts and 12 kind of part-time contracts. And obviously they have already qualified for the World Cup in New Zealand. So they'll be kind of building and looking forward to that. So it looks like Welsh rugby is on the up. They're kind of getting more kind of teams in Wales up and coming. A lot of their girls are playing for kind of Bristol, Gloucester Heartbreak in the Premiership 15s. So hopefully they're kind of able to bring that kind of experience from there back to Wales and hopefully be able to grow a bit of the game there. But second game next weekend down in Wales should be a good one, and one that hopefully we can steal the win.
Yeah, and this kind of stuff, I suppose, the women's rugby is, you see it, Craig, on social media, kind of making waves outside of the kind of bubble it was maybe restricted to before, not by its own fault, just due to nobody really kind of giving it the exposure it needs. But, you know, someone like Jazz Joyce, and you've got people talking about Jazz Joyce, not just as one of the best women player, but one of the best rugby players in the world right now. And that's, you know, you see the clips of her in sevens doing the rounds, and that's got to be really good for the game in general, having names like that out there.
I think with, if we could get to a stage that it was mirroring slightly the Six Nations build-ups. So, you know, we've got these you know, when the men's Six Nations is going on, we've got these names of, and they're becoming more and more house, you know, the DuPonts, the Farrells, if we, God, I have to mention his name, but yeah, the Farrells, the Alwyn Jones, you've got these players. And if we could get to that point where you've got the Jazz Joyces, you've got the Jade Conkles, you've got, my head's gone completely just now, but you've got those names that are out there being constantly talked about, constantly, and, you know, instead of just being a second thought, it's a first thought to mirror the Six Nations in the build-ups. Now, that I've seen a little bit of the build-ups now, and the BBC are doing quite well, I think, and you're getting to see a little bit in their build-ups, you're getting to see the adverts, etc., for it. And if we can get more and more of that and more promotion, then we're going to have a far better attended and a bigger audience for the Six Nations.
Yeah. Then it's France next. Now, France, obviously, what's strange about France, I suppose, Rachel, compared to England, is that the Scotland have beaten France in the last couple of years. And that, what does that do for a team like Scotland? Because it must give them confidence and take away that kind of element of, you know, here's an unassailable opponent because we've assailed them before.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was kind of October time 2020, we drew with them 13-all, Rachel Shankland's with the score in the corner to get the draw. So no, yeah, it is good that we are able to kind of compete. They have some outstanding players. Their nine is currently injured, but their kind of second choice nine, Sansis, she is particularly good as well. And Drew on their 10 is fantastic as well. So I think it'll be a tough game. The kind of French women's rugby, one of our players, Rona Lloyd, and a few players previously, Chloe Rollier and Jade Conkle, have played over in France and kind of got a bit of experience of French rugby. And the French fans, they love their rugby. It is all over their TVs. They get millions of people watching it. So French women's rugby is fantastic. So for us to go and be able to compete at that level will be fantastic. And fingers crossed, we should be able to put out a good performance against them.
Yeah. Italy, Craig. I get it wasn't the best of games against Italy last year, but I don't know. I think it's we talked about kind of the Japan game and a couple of games where maybe the team had a tendency to maybe switch off and not turn up, because that's the wrong word, but do you know what I mean? That kind of like have kind of like little blips along the way, and that kind of felt what the Italy game was, because Scotland have been competitive against Italy in the past.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Apart from the odd game that's played in a mud bath down in Italy, that game was amazing. I just couldn't believe it. That it was the state of the pitch and everything was terrible. But Italy are a hard team to beat, but Scotland have got the beating off Italy. But then, you know, I think Scotland have got the beating of at least three teams out of the Six Nations. And maybe a fourth. So I think it'll be an interesting one. But Italy's always an interesting game because I think we've got a very, very good chance to take them this year.
Yeah. We've got Angus Thompson on the comments asking where Scotland are ranked in the world. I mean, Scotland are currently ninth. I think Italy are eighth, and it's actually fairly tight between Scotland and ninth on 73.48 points, Italy 76.43, and it's kind of, I suppose, five downwards. Between Australia and Scotland, there's five different ranking points, which would kind of, I suppose, Rachel, show the kind of progression that Scotland have made, that they're firmly in the top 10, and the gap between ninth and fifth isn't that wide.
Yeah, no, agree. And the Women's World Cup in September, October time this year in New Zealand will hopefully give kind of all of those teams a platform to kind of show how they are going their games and how the kind of women's rugby in each of those countries is coming along. Something that was quite interesting that I read this week was about the New Zealand squad. So they have chosen to make 38 players professional in the lead up to their World Cup, and those professional contracts are looking at payments of about £32,000 a year. So they are taking women's rugby particularly seriously. They've always been, the Black Ferns have always been a fantastic rugby team, but it's brilliant to see them hopefully kind of leading the way for women's rugby, and having the Women's World Cup there hopefully kind of sets the standard and platform for women's rugby throughout the world. So yes, that'll be an interesting one in October and September, and hopefully Scotland can kind of prove that they deserve to be in that top 10 and they deserve to be competing against some of the best teams up there.
Yeah, because you don't get much of an opportunity. It's not like kind of with the men's game where there's the autumn series where all the teams from the south travel up north and, you know, we get our chance every 3 years to play New Zealand or test ourselves every year against Australia and South Africa. So I suppose it is a bit of an unknown going down to the Southern Hemisphere and a World Cup for Scotland and really kind of testing themselves against these teams.
Yeah, definitely. And looking at the pool that Scotland are in, it's going to be a challenging one to say the least. Playing against, so I think the opening game is New Zealand versus Australia. So hopefully that sets a really good tone. And then obviously we've got Australia, New Zealand and Wales. So all of those games will be tough games. But yes, as you say, it's difficult to know what level everyone's on. We've never played, we've not played them in a very long time. So it'll be interesting to see where we're kind of sitting in terms of competing against the Southern Hemisphere teams.
Yeah. The last game is Ireland. And again, there's been, Craig, Ireland, women's rugby in Ireland seems to be in utter turmoil at the minute. There's all sorts of different stories coming out, and there's been a commitment now to kind of investigate that and get it sorted out. But Ireland have always, I think, you know, have always been one of the better sides, but Scotland seem to have caught up in the last kind of 3-4 years, certainly.
Yeah, I think well, you know, again, this is my opinion on it, but it looks like the Ireland were they were right up there. They invested in the women's game right at the beginning, and they continued and they played on, and they had a very, very good pool of players to pull from, but they haven't developed it. It doesn't seem like they've put the money into it to develop it, and they've just stuck with the tried and tested method, and unfortunately they've got to a point where all the other teams have caught up with them. And then to have the year that the Irish players have had with what seems like an incredible amount of lack of support and an incredible lack of respect when it comes to changing rooms and different things. Now, the question I have is has that been happening before, and it's getting highlighted more because of social media, and have they had to deal with this for a long time? But whatever happened to have what happened to the Ireland, to the Irish team, was really just disrespectful to the amount of work and that these professional athletes put in. And so I think Ireland have really had a bit of a, hopefully they've had a bit of a fright with the reaction that the rugby world had, and it got a lot of the rugby world talking about women's rugby again. Not only the positives, but also the negatives. So hopefully it's opened given more presence to it, and people are starting to talk about it, both sides, and hopefully it's going to do some good eventually. But yeah, I think Ireland have kind of stayed where they are. Just to answer that's a huge big long answer to a short question, but I think Ireland have stayed where they are, whereas others have come through and are investing more into their game.
Yeah, because it was Ireland that Scotland beat in that mini tournament. Am I remembering that rightly? to qualify for. So Ireland didn't qualify for the World Cup at the expense of Scotland. Beat them, Rachel. So that's, I mean, that's a massive marker for Scotland. It almost feels like the point at which Scotland kind of have almost overtaken Irish rugby from the women's game point of view.
Yeah, definitely. And as Craig says, it's disappointing because Ireland were at the forefront of women's rugby a couple of seasons ago. So, yeah, they've definitely taken their foot off the pedal and they'll be disappointed that they're not going to the World Cup in New Zealand. So hopefully they can kind of reconsider everything and look at potentially putting a bit more funding into it so that in 4 years' time they're able to compete on that world stage.
Yeah. Let's talk about England then. So normally, Craig, we sit here before matches and we don't normally record on a Thursday. So we don't normally know what the team is and then we have to kind of hastily arrange. It's nice to sit in a longer podcast, Craig, and have it in front of us to talk about.
Absolutely.
It's a very experienced team, Rachel. I don't know, kind of like really, until I went through it today, kind of there's really only you've got Leah Bartlett and Christine Belzile on both on 12 caps, but everybody else is 20 caps plus, and that's got to be, I mean, it's probably one of the most experienced women's teams Scotland have had in the past few years.
Yeah, exactly. There's only one change to the starting 15 from that team that started against Colombia. So obviously we had Emma Wassell a couple of weeks ago getting her 50th cap. Now that was a particularly special one because that was 50 consecutive caps, which was an incredible achievement for her. So hopefully this weekend we'll be seeing Jade Conkle getting her 50th with a couple, Lana and Sarah Law will be hopefully following close behind her. So yeah, a fantastic squad full of lots of experience with a little sprinkle of some newer players coming through. You've got the likes of Eva Donaldson, Shona Campbell on the bench, along with Meryl Smith, who is uncapped, and fingers crossed she gets off the bench and gets her first cap.
Yeah, am I right in thinking that with Emma Wassell, that it's 50 caps consecutive starting, but even the other two are consecutive caps as well, that she came off the bench in both those other. So I mean, it's a phenomenal. I think I put it out on Twitter when it was in the fit, she made the benchmark saying, has anybody else done this in rugby? I think the only, and it was JPR Williams, I think was the only name that came back. So in this era of rugby, that's a phenomenal record.
Yeah, a fantastic, fantastic record. And yeah, Waz is a hard worker both on and off the pitch. So great testament to her. So no, fantastic achievement.
And that's, Craig, that's sorry.
Yeah, go on, Craig. No, go on.
That's what cracks. We were just talking about it earlier on about the lack of games, because you know, I've been lucky enough to run into Jade Conkle many times throughout her career, and she's seen. This sounds terrible because it's like she's old, but you know, she's been within the Scotland setup in my mind for a long, long time, and she's just getting her 50th cap now. And it just strikes me. If she was in the men's game, she would be getting close to 100. And the same with Waz, I would have thought, she would have been 100, 110, you know, so it really does strike you the fact that you don't get the opportunity to play as many games internationally as you would want to.
Yeah, exactly. And another one as well. So Sarah, my sister Sarah Law, she'll hopefully be getting her 50th cap in this Six Nations campaign. But she posted on Instagram just earlier, she's played in 10 consecutive Six Nations. So that's 10 wow. years that she's been involved in, and now only getting her 50th cap, albeit she's had a very bumpy road with quite a few injuries, but still 10 consecutive Six Nations and still only 50 caps. So as you say, there's just not that many games each year for the women to play in, but hopefully with things like the World Cup, with potential summer tours, potential kind of autumn internationals. Obviously, we played against Japan back in November time. So hopefully things like that will kind of come and be more prominent in the women's side of things.
Right. This is something we've talked about before, I think, on the pod, Craig and I. Would you rather, Rachel, that see women's rugby kind of continue to try and mirror men's rugby in the way that kind of the with the summer tours and the autumn tours, or do you think there's an opportunity here to kind of completely start from scratch and look at new things like European tournaments and regular, you know, mini tournaments, rather than trying to say, well, we'll do an autumn tour and a summer tour with the traditional names?
Yeah, I do. I think having the Six Nations this year as a kind of separate entity to the men's has been good. I think it brings a whole new hype. You can hype about the men's and then you can move on and be right, here's the women's Six Nation, and the media side of things builds it up. Hopefully that gets more attention and more people wanting to watch. So yeah, if there is the possibility for the women to kind of branch out and create their own tournaments going forward, I think it would be brilliant. Something new, it keeps it interesting and hopefully gets more people watching it.
Yeah. I want to talk about England, because I'm fascinated about how a team like Scotland prepares for a game like England, because England almost feel like, I mean, the All Blacks of the women's game, and that they feel unbeatable. And the game, you know, Scotland obviously scored 10 points last year against them. Do you go into a game like that planning to win and target them, or do you kind of go in with kind of a kind of smaller targets of winning individual battles and just seeing how things go? How do you kind of go about preparing for a game like this, Rachel?
I think you go into every rugby game with the intention of winning. As you say, it's difficult. They are an extremely experienced team. And as I said earlier, they have been growing the women's game for 10, 15, 20 years or so. So they are leaps and bounds ahead of where Scotland are. And at the end of the day, they are professional. It's amateurs versus professionals. So being able to compete is a challenge. But we've shown in the past there's been aspects of Scotland versus England where we have been able to compete, particularly at scrum time last year. We won quite a few scrum penalties and we're kind of not bullying their forwards up front, but I think we were stepping up and kind of showing what we can do. And this year in particular, having kind of the experience, our front row all playing down in the Tyrrells in the Allianz Premier 15s, I think it'll be really good. Lots of our squad are in and around, know the England girls particularly well. Take, for example, all of the Loughborough Lightning lot from Scotland. They'll be playing with the likes of Helena Rowland, with Emily Scarrett. So they'll know how they play and hopefully be able to use that to their advantage. But yeah, I'd hope we'd go into it with, we want to be able to compete. We want to be able to win. And as you say, setting realistic goals, but hopefully we're able to put out a performance that we're proud of.
Yeah. There's something in that, Craig, isn't there? About the, you know, the, it takes away the fear of, if you're familiar with the opposition. I remember I was terrible at rugby. So I was generally, if Berwick turned up to play somebody and the other team were a man down, it was always me that got sent. And I actually really enjoyed playing those games because I knew there was no unknown. It's like, well, I know what my mates are like. I know I don't really fear them because I train against them every Wednesday night, as opposed to going up against an unknown opposition. And I think there is something in that, maybe now that we have more players down in the Premier 15s, that there is less of an unknown element for the players going into it.
I think also you've got the situation where, especially in the forwards, you've got a lot of the forwards within the Scotland setup that A, have been playing against the forwards in the England setup regularly. There's nothing to fear, and also they can change a game because they can go out and put in a big hit or put in a, you know, steal a ball in the line out, or again, scrum penalties, and have England, you know, get into the English heads, because they are being built up as this all-conquering team, and if the players aren't have absolutely no acceptance of that, the public kind of look at it as an all-conquering team. The players are going, yeah, I can beat my opposite number, no problem whatsoever. Then they start to doubt themselves, and then you get that edge, and I think. It's an exciting time. It's an exciting game, and also having I'm a little bit biased because it's our home venue, but having the Dam Health as well it just adds all of that. It brings a crowd in closer, and you can hear the individual shouts, you can hear the individual conversations, and it just, I think it's a really exciting prospect.
Yeah, and do you think that'll help, Rich? Because I was going to ask that, kind of the being in a kind of the dam with the you know, the crowd so close to the pitch, does that have an impact when you're playing, having, you know, the kind of numbers there?
Yeah, definitely. And the stadium's fantastic. Played against Japan in November there, and all of the girls said it was a fantastic experience. You could hear everyone, the crowd were like that extra man, and really got them going. So no, I think it's a fantastic opportunity. I've heard ticket sales are pretty good. We're looking in excess of 4,000, so it'll be fantastic. And what a way to kind of kick off the Women's Six Nations at a fantastic venue with a hopefully a full stadium. So no, I think the Dam House is a brilliant stadium, and hopefully the girls can use that encouragement from the supporters.
Yeah, and you can almost see, Craig, it could become a bit of a fortress for Scotland, that, and you know, in a way that I think, you know, Scott, I'm not just saying this because the Glasgow lads aren't here tonight, but in a way that I think
you can see all you want
I think, in a way that, you know, because you've not got the ScotRail track at the back. Do you know what I mean? It's got that feel of, it could become somewhere that teams will fear to come because of the potential atmosphere you can create there.
Yeah, I you know, Edinburgh themselves this year have always said that they love playing there because of how much the crowd are involved in the game. If your head's going down, the crowd lifts you. And I think obviously I would far rather have Scotland playing in Murrayfield, and because we're to 60,000 people, and I would far rather have that. But if we can build and we can fill the dam, and then start building into Murrayfield, and then, because I really can't say it enough that we have to go and watch the team play live, because they are a phenomenal team. These you know, and this isn't trying to be condescending in any way, but these athletes that are not being paid their value to play a professional game as an amateur, to watch them play the game they play and how they've developed has been a phenomenal experience for me for over the last 10 years. And so I can't push more people, more of the paying public to go and actually pay the money and go and watch them. And if you can get into the Dam Health is a nice up-to-date stadium. It's no matter what Johnny and that say about it being a tent, it's not a tent. Scotstoun started that way back as well. You get so close to the game, you're almost in it, and it really is a fantastic venue. So no, if anyone has time this weekend on Saturday to go and pay your money and go and watch the game, it'll be brilliant.
Do you think it helps, Rachel, that, you know, Scotland women having a home now? Because for a lot of years now, it was, you know, the back pitches, maybe occasionally Murrayfield, sometimes Scotstoun, but actually to have a say, well, this is our ground now, that's got to give a kind of psychological advantage.
Yeah, no, massively. I remember, gosh, back good 10 years ago or so, we used to have to travel. There was a game up in Aberdeen, there was a game at Lasswade, there was a game at Myreside. For the girls to be able to have somewhere they can call home, that's their home ground, that's their home territory, and that's what they'll defend, is fantastic. And as Craig says, the Dam Health Stadium, if that was to become Scotland Women's Stadium, in kind of the shadows of Murrayfield itself, I think it would be fantastic. And it's a place that the girls can call their own, call home, and welcome teams to challenge them on their home ground. So no, I think it would be fantastic if Scottish rugby were able to create that kind of home environment for the girls.
Mm, yeah,
definitely.
I'm going to ask you both now, it's a difficult question, we always have to do it when we're previewing Six Nations. Rachel, I'll start with you. Where do you think Scotland will be, and where would you like them to be?
Well, obviously, I'd like them to be at the top.
We'll be champions, but... I know, but... Yeah. but from a realistic point of view, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, exactly. In terms of games, I think there's three winnable games. I think we can definitely compete against Wales, Ireland and Italy. If we play the game that we have been playing over the past couple of months or so. So obviously I'd love us to win the whole thing. Put out a really good show. But yeah, I think there's definitely three winnable games and two opportunities to challenge the upper end France and England, who are kind of leading the way of women's rugby. So yes, three definite winnable games.
Yeah. So third place, Craig?
Yeah, I don't see. I have to be careful because I went a bit crazy with the Six Nations that's just passed and said we've got a chance to win this, you know, and then Wales stopped that. I think we're in a far more. I'm going to say this. The team is more cohesive than the male team. They've been around a lot longer, although we've got depth and we've got the ability that, you know, all the players that are on the bench will be able to come in and make a difference. There's absolutely no qualms about that whatsoever. But we've got the depth. I'm talking about depth again, Cammy, because we're talking about
I was worried about depth.
I really do believe that there's a possibility of a huge performance this Six Nations, and everything is pointing in that direction, and having, just as you say, having a home as well really is going to make a huge difference. It's somewhere you have to defend. It's your place. You don't want anyone else coming in there, and maybe those little switch off moments will be gone, and we're expecting a performance for 80 minutes.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be challenging because obviously our two home games are against England and against France. So we'll be competing against Wales, Ireland and Italy away from home. So I think that'll add an element of difficulty to it. But hopefully, kind of mind games aside, hopefully the girls are able to put in good performances away from home.
I wonder how much, obviously there was the first kind of repercharge, the European based one, the way obviously Scotland went away and put in some big performances to get to the second kind of world repercharge, and how much that you're winning away from home in Italy and that mini tournament will have, Rachel, in terms of giving them the confidence to know that they can go on the road and put in these big performances. Even going to Colombia, like we were saying on the podcast, Colombia were complete unknown to Scotland because just nobody, you know, they haven't played them, no experience of playing with them, against them. So in itself, that was a huge performance and a huge win, and that's got to give them confidence that they can go away, I guess, and get these wins.
Yeah, definitely. And I think more than ever, what's been brilliant in the lead up to this Six Nations is obviously we had that tournament in Italy, we had the game against Japan, and then we've had the game in Dubai against Colombia. So that's, look, an extra five games in the lead up to this Six Nations. That's five kind of opportunities for the girls to play together, to become more cohesive, to understand each other better, and to hopefully go into the Six Nations in an even better place than they have done in previous Six Nations. So to go to these places, to go to Italy for 3 weeks and play three challenging games, and be able to come away with the opportunity to go to the second repertoire was fantastic. And then obviously, as you say, that game against Colombia, there was lots of kind of frantic analysis going on when Colombia played against Kazakhstan, but both of those teams were complete unknowns to us. Scotland have played a couple of times against Kazakhstan at sevens, but sevens and 15 completely different, and that was quite a few years ago. So the Kazakhstan team was new to us as well. So yes, it's very much an unknown, and I think, as you mentioned earlier, that's what's going to be so exciting about the World Cup in New Zealand, playing against those teams that are very much unknowns off the back of the Six Nations, hopefully with a good run at it, and should put in some good performances.
Excellent. Well, look, that seems a good point to leave it for this week. We'll be back next week. I don't know what day we'll be back on. We'll sort it out, but keep an eye on our social media. You can follow us on Twitter at Scott Rugby Pod and at Scott Rugby Blog. We're on Facebook as well if you want to find us on there, and you can go to the blog scottishrugbyblog.co.uk. Craig's going to do us a match report, I think. Craig, or you do some sort of coverage over the weekend?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
We're good. And we'll be back with a review of the match next week. But Rachel, thank you very much for joining us. It's It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Craig, thank you as always.
No problem. Thank you.
And goodbye, everybody, for listening. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye.